Hey, what's up? John Doherty here for Radio Tacoma's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate, always respectfully, ever striving to be fact-based, open to divergent perspectives, and always actively optimistic. Today we're going to be talking with Kristen Ang, who is a commissioner with the Port of Tacoma. The port is a tremendously important part of everything it touches. Our jobs, our industry, our environment, the Puyallup Tribe of Indians, our health, traffic congestion, the list goes on. I'm going to be talking with Commissioner Ang in this episode about the port's vision for the near-term to long-term environmental impacts of all of those activities, impacts that affect every one of us on the Sound. So here we go. Kristen Ang, welcome to Climate Talk. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks, John, for having me here.
Well, let's start out. I drive by the port, the tide flats, as we refer to them colloquially, and several times a week. And the place is huge. There's a lot going on there. And I got to say that a lot of it is pretty much a mystery to me. So I'm hoping that you can clear up some of that mystery for me today, especially we're going to talk about climate-related stuff like emissions and associated with that. So as we are going to talk about emissions, don't jump into that right now, but just give us a view of what the port does.
Sure. Well, first of all, my name is Kristen Ang. I am a Port of Tacoma commissioner and also a Northwest Seaport Alliance managing member because the ports of Seattle and Tacoma formed an alliance in 2015 with regards towards their marine cargo operations. I was elected in 2019 as the first person of color on the Port of Tacoma Commission in 100 years and endorsed by the Puyallup Tribe of Indians. And I ran on an environmental justice and community, service platform. I would say that the Port of Tacoma, I usually call it the economic engine of Pierce County. That's its nickname. With our marine cargo operations in the Seaport Alliance, it brings over $12 billion into our economy. We are a very trade-dependent state, and we support about 58,000 jobs in Washington State. And oftentimes, if you look out, you will see vessels with containers. And if I had to describe it in 2 seconds, it's ship, ship, money, money.
Well, that is a great summary that anybody could understand. So I think I interrupted you there. What else?
Well, we don't have the population to absorb all this, all the containers and goods. We compete for the Midwest markets. When it comes to the environment, there has been a lot of progress in the maritime industry and with the Port of Tacoma.
Well, of course, that's good news. And I am looking forward to digging in more with you regarding that topic in particular. Just a couple other quick curiosities I've got. So is there any kind of regulatory or governmental overlap between the port and other entities like the City of Tacoma or Pierce County or City of Fife, for instance?
We often work together in terms of our transportation projects, particularly with the City of Fife, with Highway 167, the Port of Tacoma I-5 interchange, also with the City of Tacoma, because they are in charge of land use policy over the tide flats, because it is part of the port is part of the City of Tacoma.
So it sounds complex.
Yes, as well as we, in terms of addressing climate and environment, we are part of the Puget Sound Collaborative, but we also have to follow federal, state, and city regulations, such as we always work with the Washington State Department of Ecology.
So in terms of your duties and your authorities, I'm talking about the ports. What is the statutory framework for that? I mean, what laws direct or guide you in what the port does?
I believe that is RCW 53, Title 53.
Okay, well, I'll look that up after the fact.
And we have the mandate economic development. Usually for ports, there are 75 ports around there in Washington State. There are 150 nationally. It's interesting that Washington has half. I think it's because we formed these independent port districts to battle the power of the railroad barons who could have owned our shores. And so labor, longshore, bankers, agriculture, because that's actually a very important part of our economy and very tied to our ports here in Seattle and Tacoma. We often speak with them because we do a lot of agricultural imports, wanted to protect our waterways and even some of the tourism and public shorelines for the public use, and that it would not just be controlled by these powerful railroads. And that's how the city of Tacoma came to be about, or some people would say colonized, because the railroads decided to land in Tacoma because it was a deep water port. And we were often said it was where the rails meet the sails.
Yeah, so you're kind of pointing out there, to really understand a place, you have to understand its history some too. And it does sound like an intriguing history. First off, I want to just acknowledge what you said at the outset in terms of your stances, the things you cared about as you ran for the port. And I've got to say that it's pretty exceptional that you bring that approach to the port, which you point out that the economics are pretty much of a mandate, and other things like equity and environment can slip sometimes if a mandate is about economics. So I'm saying that you bring a really important piece to the commission. So in your position there, if you were to point to something that has been different than you expected or surprised you, what would that be?
I would say there's not a debate about climate change anymore in the maritime industry, or even about our role as environmental stewards. That has changed. I think the port has always done cleanups, tried to be environmentally, compliant, and done some good things on the environment. However, it is envisioning their role as a leader, as a connector, and being more aggressive in reducing emissions. I think that has changed because of what's happening in our community and also the world, as well as relationships with the Puyallup tribe. That has become better, looking at the Puyallup tribe as well as business partners. And just to keep on trying with that relationship, it's 100 years. So things are not going to happen overnight if there has been tension. The Puyallup tribe has been the environmental steward since time immemorial. And these were, we now acknowledge that these were their lands. Every port meeting, which is new, we do a land acknowledgement that some of the success of the port, the future port, is tied with our relationship with the tribe. And I think that is a cultural shift in mindset, as well as the day-to-day practices of the port. I would say that we are doing a lot more investment in climate change and being more aggressive on reducing emissions, and thinking of us as the connector now. I think when we first ran the campaign, people were wondering, what are you saying? And now that is just mainstream.
Well, it's really good to hear that kind of influence being taken to the Port Commission. So you mentioned that the maritime industry in general is not questioning the reality of climate change, and they're concerned about emissions. And so is that just because they want to be good stewards, good citizens, or are there other reasons why they would take that stance?
I think they know that the clean energy transition is inevitable, and that is where fortunes will be made, as well as that is what we call them beneficial cargo owners, but you probably just call them big stores like Amazon, IKEA. They're demanding also to greening their supply chain, their value chain. So as well as the shipping companies are now in it. They would like to also lessen their GHG. I mean, we understand as an industry, we are likely the sixth largest emitter of GHGs, sixth or eighth, it fluctuates, but we know we have to do something. And in some cases, that whole thing where we're just the place where goods get transported, that's not good enough in this modern world when we have to address climate change. So we are also connectors. This is one way that we can transform our transportation system, is through our ports to be clean energy hubs. We have trucks, we have rails, we deal with ships. But also, we are very international. So when changes happen and we collaborate, it is a global change. It affects the entire world. And so this is where the opportunities lies with ports, is to be those kind of leaders, that clean energy hub for their community.
Yeah, I like that notion of leaders or leadership, because I feel like in the last few decades, maybe the United States hasn't lived up to its potential role as a leader in addressing climate change and environmental issues. And a great point that I hadn't thought of before, and that is that the port's kind of in a leverage point to impact things far beyond the port. So an interesting perspective. So I want to quote something from your website and see if we can dig into that a little bit. The quote is, "Within the port's direct control are actions to reduce and eliminate emissions from port-owned equipment, buildings, facilities, and fleets. So when I read that, that tells me that the port doesn't really have direct control over what we could call the tenants of the port. Is that right?
We don't have direct control over certain things, but we have influence and we have lease terms and incentives. And so for our terminals that we build, sometimes public-private partnership, we have shore power technology that we're investing millions, tens of millions of dollars in, so that when ships are at berth, they can plug into clean electricity instead of emitting diesel particulates into our community. That's for both to reduce pollution and GHG, but also for our community's health. And so we're making investments as that. We're putting incentives for trucks. We did a clean truck program in which said that you had to have a truck that was updated beyond 2007. And that probably is a 90% cleaner engines than what was before. And now I'm part of the truck working group for the Northwest Seaport Alliance, and we have a zero emission truck collaborative that we are forming with various stakeholders, trucking community, just even our environmental groups, community members, those that are involved in electric, hydrogen, the alternative fuels. And we're going to come up with some, as well as demonstration projects for these to show how these electric trucks and hydrogen trucks work, the reliability, and also investing into see where we need to put the infrastructure to accommodate these medium to heavy duty electric hydrogen alternative fuel trucks. Well, and so this is happening, though we don't control everything our tenant does. They're with us and with these things, as well as we can make policies and ask for legislation from our state and federal government that would incentivize or at least make laws and rules. And so does ecology makes these rules and we have to follow to be compliant and to be able to operate.
So you said that a lot of the tenants, maybe all the tenants, I don't know, seem to be on board with making reducing greenhouse gas emissions and related stuff like that. And so they're doing that also because of this good steward or good citizen perspective, rather than there are specific requirements like the electric truck, or I guess I should say clean truck program. What motivates the truckers to comply with those concepts?
I would say some want to be the first movers, because the first movers sometimes get rewarded. There are now tax credits that you can get from the Inflation Reduction Act, about $40,000 per truck, and some money for EV charging stations. I would say that there are still, though, people where that's not enough. We have 4,000, 5,000 trucks, drayage trucks that come to our gateway. And there are some that where these electric trucks are like probably 8 to 10 times more expensive than a used diesel truck from the old years, and they'll use it till it dies out. And so in some ways there has to be an incentivizing, and likely these are not probably the most wealthy of the truck owners. They're independent operators. And in some ways we do have to help them and support them, whether through financing or other programs, grant programs or whatnot.
So you've used that the time frame of 2007 here several times. So I'm just inferring from that, engines were built after or 2007 and later are less polluting. I think you said they're much less polluting.
Much less, like 80% less, so 90% less. But now people are even moving into the zero emission, which kind of trucking, and so that's a whole leap. And there have been some pilot projects in the port of Long Beach and LA, Oakland, in 2018 to show what they can do and their reliability as well as what's needed. I think we are also doing some pilot projects, and it'll cost about a few million dollars. We're trying to still get more funding to show how it would be like here in our gateway to have electric or hydrogen trucks. When I say tenants, I mean, these are not necessarily our tenants. These are just part of our supply chain, a part of our gateway, our trucks. Tenants are often terminal operators, or in some cases we deal with the vessels. We don't have control necessarily of those vessels, but they do comply with like ECA. And so they have to have either ultra low sulfur diesel or ways to have less emissions. But we are, which is a change, lobbying the IMO International Maritime Organization. So we are saying that we do have to have at least that deadline of 2050. Even some of the vessel owners themselves are also seeking out R&D. And the alternative fuel that people are really looking at is green hydrogen, which we are very much, I would say, positioned in the Pacific Northwest to be a green hydrogen hub. And the White House administration, they are doing a hydrogen shot. You probably heard of the hydrogen hubs application. $8 billion will go to 4 to 8 hydrogen hubs. We are currently competing for them, the Pacific Northwest, with the Department of Commerce as the lead. And Tacoma Public Utilities is a leader in this, as well as our Pacific Northwest Laboratory. And we will be accepting the invitation from the U.S. State Department to partner with them and the Republic of Korea and the Busan Port Authority on a study of the feasibility about a green corridor between our gateway and Korea. These green corridors were featured in COP26, the Clydesdale agreement, and in saying that we want to feature these first movers, these 6 green corridors, I think from the North America, if not more, by 2030, 2035, to show that shipping can be greened and at a fast rate. And this will be reliant on green hydrogen and other alternative fuels. And so it's coming. That transition is happening now and building that infrastructure. And if you look up on the White House administration site, there's a thing called the hydrogen shot, trying to make hydrogen 1 kilogram $1 in 1 decade and with these hydrogen hubs. And Tacoma is likely going to be very much part of ground zero for these transitions.
Well, I certainly have my fingers crossed for a hydrogen hub here in Tacoma in the Northwest. So do you have any sense of when the decision by the federal government is going to be made about who gets the money?
I would have to get back to you on that. I know that our electeds in DC and all of us here are definitely advocating for the hydrogen hub to happen in the Pacific Northwest, and perhaps even U.S. oil to one of their 12, where I think this is one of their 12 refineries in the Tide Flats to become a green hydrogen.
Cool. Well, I'll take a gander at that myself and see if I can nail it down a little bit and just put it in the outro for today's program.
But I also wanted to say that we don't own all the Tide Flats. We own about, the Port of Tacoma owns half, 2,000 acres. And so when people say Tide Flats or Port of Tacoma, we actually don't own all of it. We own about half of it. And we are often the ones that are doing the cleanup and the monitoring and the remediation. We put back about 400 acres back into good use. And we did some habitat restoration, about over 200 acres over the years.
So that's great, of course. One of the things I wonder about on these things, though, is who is paying for these things. So, for instance, you mentioned electrifying shore power for the ships that come into our port, and you mentioned millions of dollars in installing that. So who is it that's paying those millions of dollars?
We are, as a port. We are paying it with our operating. We are paying it as a part of our capital investments plan. We are also receiving grants and monies from the federal and state.
Okay, so where
we
does
hope
the...
to get more, perhaps from the Climate Commitment Act, so we can use that.
So where does the money in the capital investment fund come from?
We actually make a lot of money ourselves from the operating of these terminals. We also have a very low property tax for Pierce County that we often use for our bond ratings, to pay bonds, as well as to do environmental cleanup.
So it sounds like at least a very significant portion of the cost of what you're doing to clean up the environment there is paid by the tenants and the other users of the port. Is that a fair thing to say?
I guess if we could say there was profits from the port, yes, we are putting it back into shore power, making these investments.
Okay,
it's public because we're getting money from the state and federal.
Okay, so that kind of cuts to the chase that I was wondering about, and that is, so to some extent, the work we're doing to clean up the port or to make it less polluting is supported by the taxpayers.
Both taxpayers and the profits and capital of the port.
Understood. Perfect. Okay. So you mentioned the Northwest Ports Clean Air Strategy, and what is that? And I got some specific questions once you kind of give me the overview of what that organization is all about.
Well, the Northwest Ports Clean Air Strategy is, first of all, those are in it. The people that are the organizations that are in it are the Port of Tacoma, the Port of Vancouver, British Columbia, Port of Seattle, and what we call the Seaport Alliance, which is really just the Port of Tacoma and Port of Seattle together in our marine cargo operation. We are working voluntarily, collaboratively together. And we set a deadline of 2050 for zero emissions, if not sooner. And so we passed this in 2020, and we had an implementation in 2021. And that just meant that how are we going to get there? And probably the most important part of any goal, when we set out a goal that's long in the future, like 2050 or sooner, is what we're going to do in the next 5 to 10 years. And that was to invest in shore power, have some zero emission cargo handling equipment here, work on our facilities. We were also working on a South Harbor electrification map. So we are trying to electrify our whole harbor here in Tacoma.
Well, as I listen to you, I mean, the task seems large, but it does seem like the port is really taking this seriously and is moving judiciously forward in terms of reducing greenhouse gas emissions and so on. So are there metrics in place that you and the public can know how we're doing in terms of our zero emissions by 2050?
Yes, we actually do update this quarterly. There's a Clean Air Quarterly that you can get from the Northwest Seaport Alliance on where we are progressing with this. We also, every year, I like to say the budget is a reflection of our values. You will see where we're investing in either shore power or zero cargo handling equipment or usually public-private partnerships in these things. We're also seeking out how we can be kind of partners with the alternative fuels, how that can work with our gateway. I would say with the clean air port strategy, it's probably the most aggressive and ambitious we've been with that clean air. A lot of it was achieved also by the vessels themselves when they decided to comply with ECA standards.
So,
but it'll keep on going because we're investing more in as a maritime industry in the alternative fuels and zero emission technology.
Yeah. So the fact that that you can say to the public in these quarterly reports, okay, this is what we're doing, this is where we're headed, that seems pretty powerful to me. And I'm going to put a link to the program notes so people can find that. I think that often, politically speaking, we get promises about things, but then not so much in the meeting, the promises. So the ability to keep track as we go along, it's like a family having a budget. You know, you have certain goals, but if you're not keeping track as you go along, then the goals are just dreams, really. So,
I mean, I guess if you could get geeky about it, you'll just see updates about, we're implementing energy efficiency and lighting updates at port-owned buildings, or transitioning our administration vehicle fleets, or incorporating more sustainable building practices, or shore power, clean truck program. So people are very much interested in that. That's what they'll get from the Clean Air Quarterly.
Well, so what I'm thinking about is, you mentioned that there's a specific goal set for 2050, and that is zero emissions for the port. So did I hear you right on that?
Yes, zero emissions for the port. And I know that people have wanted it to be sooner, and that's why it's biased. Let's emphasize on how to get there sooner. But I always think the most important part of any goal is what you're going to do next. And so really the 5-10 years is most important. I saw that there was a study by the Department of Energy saying that by 2035, it'll be cheaper or even easier to maintain an electric truck, electric and hydrogen and fuel cell trucks than a diesel truck. That we, by 2030, there'll be so much more zero emission trucks out there. And so it's happening now. We're just trying to figure out how to lay the foundations, the infrastructures, work with all our stakeholders that are in trucking, shipping, the vessels. We need infrastructure on the shore side. What's going to happen? It's not just even within our gateway, but across the state and the country.
So the Washington Department of Health scores surrounding areas all around the state, really, in terms of the hazards to health related. And as you probably know, coming down I-5 and through Fife and into the port is rated as bad as it gets in the state. So is that something that the port takes into consideration as they're signing leases? And I'm just wondering, too, does the city of Fife have a seat at the table when those negotiations are taking place?
We definitely take that equity, the health disparities map into mind. as we created the implementation strategy for the North Metroport's clean air strategy, we took a look at, well, where do we need to invest first and the most to reduce GHG in certain areas? And what would make the most sense, remove the most GHG in terms of our operations, and looked at some of these areas as well. So we did take a look at the health disparities map. And also there's the equity index map by the city of Tacoma. We also thought about how can we have equity in this transition? And so it's likely going to come from workforce development, opportunities in the clean energy transition. And where do we want to focus? Likely where there's been historically less access and opportunity. Those who have been absorbing some of this pollution, those communities. And so that's where we'll also put our focus in terms of workforce development and opportunities.
So getting close to the end here, but I just wanted to ask you a bit about the IRA Inflation Reduction Act of 2022. There's a lot of money in that for a lot of different things. Is the port going to benefit from that legislation financially?
Well, yes. I mean, $3 billion were set aside for ports and to electrify some infrastructure. And also there was money set aside for tax credits in terms of zero emission trucks, electric trucks and whatnot. However, there should be more. $3 billion is very low. We could, as a port, was one port. Our gateway could use all that $3 billion.
Yeah.
In terms of zero emission trucks, in terms of our shore power, we could actually use that and more. We're very happy with that it did pass. However, that is not enough funding for what we need to transition even our own gateway. But we'll also, you know, there are other opportunities and we'll also fund some of these projects ourselves.
Yeah, so a step in the right direction, but as you say, not nearly enough. And I'll just say parenthetically, I kind of have my fingers crossed regarding this election coming up November 8 in terms of what the implications of that are going to be for future funding of green energy projects and related stuff to that. So
it's great to have an administration, though, that is prioritizing and making it a mission to address climate change, the clean energy transition, environmental justice, and the job opportunities that will get us there. So these hydrogen shots, these investments in offshore wind, thinking about us ports finally, because oftentimes we are neglected, but we are actually very important to our communities and to the clean energy transition. And we're going to look at different opportunities, particularly here in the Port of Tacoma, on how we can diversify our economic development, where we could possibly be part of the clean energy transition and have more jobs for our community. I think when we look at the triple bottom line, we really do take a look about profits, people, and the planet. I think there's no more like, oh, well, this is just something we do on the side. I think one thing that changed, and we told our consultant something different, is that we want to put environment in our mission statement.
Well, I would love to see that, as I imagine a lot of
and
others.
We did.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I will look that up and make sure that I make a point of that with our show notes too. So one of the things that you alluded to there is, and I'll put it in my own terms, we tend to think sometimes, maybe too often, that climate change, adapting, mitigating climate change requires us to do things that we don't want to do or that may reduce our compensation in our jobs or whatever. But the reality that you're pointing to there is that there's lots of promise for really good stuff out there, a clean port with lots of good, clean, good paying jobs available. So is that a fair thing to say?
Definitely. I've been attending these port conferences, the international ones and the national, and this is where the opportunities lie and the investments and the jobs for our communities. So a lot of focus on clean energy, alternative fuels, reducing emissions. But in terms of also climate adaptation, this is what we must do if we want to protect our ports. It's about climate resilience. We know we want to reduce GHG, definitely, but there will still be some climate change hazards like sea level rise, flooding, landslides, wildfire, smokes, increasing temperatures. And as a port, we have to deal with that. That is just a must for the security of our port and the workers.
Yeah. So I love the tie-in you're doing there, is that addressing climate change is not just something good to do. It's something that's really necessary if we're going to thrive as a region and as a port. So I do have just one minor question for you here. You've mentioned electric trucks numerous times. Are there any electric trucks operating in and out of the port right now?
There are electric trucks, but they're not on a wild scale. Wild scale. I think I've just seen these demos. I've been to, like I said, like these expos in the Northwest. There were pilot projects in California, and that's what we're starting up is pilot projects here in the Northwest.
Okay, great. Well, I'll
So
look
there's
forward.
not this whole like fleet of electric trucks that is currently servicing our gateway. And that we would like that though. And that's what we're trying to build.
Yeah, well, I understand. You got to start somewhere. I mean, Pierce Transit's got several electric buses running. They're learning from it, and we all need to learn. I have an electric car myself, and there's definitely a learning curve just as a individual to adapt to that electric car, and it's true about electrifying everything else. So, while we are at the getting to the end here, anything else that we haven't talked about that you'd like to add before we say good day?
I think this is happening at such an accelerated pace, and it needs to be. I am happy for this change, and those that have been advocating for clean energy and climate and for te these technologies, I just want to say that it's happening. It's happening, and it's nobody's denying climate change in the small rooms with fossil fuel executives anymore. It is how we're going to address it. And I would say keep on advocating, keep on fighting, keep on being part of that change because it is happening. It's beginning. We are at that crossroads. And ports are, I would say, very much part of it. And so I welcome you to join and continue advocating and continue being part of this change.
Well, that's a great charge, and I certainly agree. And as we finish up here, Kristen, I just want to acknowledge what you're doing at the port. So happy a voice such as yours is there, an advocate for all of us in terms of building a better future. So thank you so much, and my best wishes to you and the port as we create this better world that we're looking at.
Thank you, John.
Thanks so much to Kristen Ang for shedding a lot of light on port operations and the environment there in a way understandable by us as laypersons. The port's a complicated place that's brought lots of benefits, but also lots of costs to those of us who live nearby. Kristen holds out the promise of an ever cleaner port operation, a promise that I personally am going to be tracking over the next few years. In the meantime, I'm grateful to Kristen and other board members who are so passionately working to create a port that not only has good jobs and incomes, but that cleans up not only its own act environmentally, but has the ability and the power to influence shipping far from our shores. You can contact me at john@ccltacoma.org for comments on this program or to make suggestions for future programs. The CCL part is for Citizens Climate Lobby. I'm an activist with Citizens Climate Lobby. Check it out, a bunch of good people. Join up or find another organization if you aren't already attached. That way to join your voice with others. This program, along with all other locally produced Radio Tacoma programs, can be found on the KTAH website under Programming. So until we talk again, remember that all great victories were almost great defeats, and always live like the mountain is out. Take care now.